The best way to predict the future is to invent it. Stephen Ambrose brings you up to speed on what the future holds as he explores the latest technology as it impacts our lives.
Well, good morning and welcome to Tech Talk right here on Chai FM. And big week, the season has officially begun. As usual, Samsung are first out of the starting blocks for the new generation, the 2026-2027 mobile phones. And the Galaxy Unpacked event happened in London on the 22nd, on Wednesday. And some really cool new gadgets, mostly focused around the Fold. This is not the phone launch. This is definitely all the foldables launch with some crazy new technology, some interesting new devices. And as an aside, not really, but as part of our deal, we definitely have got some new watches and, you know, just some interesting stuff around it. But we'll delve into that in quite some detail during the Tech Talk segment in about 10-15 minutes. But initially, my gadget of the week has to be the new Galaxy Z Fold 8 series and the Flip 8. Those two look amazing. There's also the Galaxy Z Fold Ultra, which we'll talk about in the full session. But gadget of the week, just a little bit of context. Foldables have been a niche product in the smartphone game for many, many years, starting off essentially with a Galaxy Fold. I have a Galaxy Fold 3, which unfortunately the screen is delaminated a little, but it's many, many years old now, and it was absolutely groundbreaking in its day. Flexible plastic, flexible glass, in fact. But now the new ones have got some titanium flex technology, which absolutely changes the game. It reduces the crease, it improves the durability, and it just makes these pretty spectacular devices. Unfortunately, I haven't actually held them, but I'm going by some people that I know who are at the launch, who really have brought us all the latest and greatest information. And simply put, the new Galaxy Fold series, which is there are three in the game, there used to be only two, but the Z Flip and the Galaxy Z Fold 8 are actually, I think, very well thought out devices. So essentially, just to give you some information about it, there were three devices: the Z Fold 8 Ultra, which replaces the old Z Fold, which was a taller and thinner device. But this one, the Ultra, and they've just delineated the ranges slightly, unfolds into an 8-inch main display. Now, this looks amazing. It measures just 4.1 millimeters thick. Some recent releases from some of the Chinese manufacturers started making the Samsungs look a little chubby. Well, they've got rid of that. They've slimmed down and leaned out for 2026. And it weighs only 215 grams. It uses the new Flex Titanium technology, which really, from the specs, from what I've seen, takes the durability and the sheer clarity and stability of the display literally to a new level. And Samsung have always been really good at pushing the sort of edge of technology with stuff that's useful and really important. And also inside the new Snapdragon 8 Elite Gen 5 chip, which is quite a significant upgrade on previous Snapdragons. It's better with batteries, it's faster, and most importantly, it has massive AI capability on chip, because that's really what's going to differentiate the current crop, starting last year, but mostly in 2026, 2027, from devices prior to that, and actually push your upgrade decision quite forward, depending. My advice always has been 2 to 3 years on a device, and then you get a really significant upgrade. Well, that might be pushing down to 2 years now, which is quite interesting, but we'll talk a little bit about that in a little while. It also comes with a 5,000 milliamp hour battery. And the battery is becoming more and more important. For a while, we were having remarkable increases in longevity and battery life just through smart processors and better batteries. But with the introduction of AI and the demands of AI, I mean, simply put, AI processing on device, which is always the secure option, and again, where the Snapdragon 8 Elite comes in, does demand more from the battery. And the bigger screens also demand more from the battery. So having a really new high-tech 5,000 milliamp hour battery does make a big difference. But interestingly, for a while, battery technology lagged everything else because a battery was a battery. But today, they seem to be pushing new chemical, new construction, and they definitely are bringing a lot bigger battery into much smaller space. I mean, 4.1 millimeter with a 5,000 milliamp battery. It's split amongst the two halves, but still, that's a lot of battery in a very small space. Then the new Z Fold 8 introduces really a new wider and shorter phone, which, based on some of the research and some of the feedback that Samsung have been getting, having a squarer phone is easier to handle. So this unfolds to a 7.6 inch main display, and it is a much more content friendly 4.3 ratio. So in other words, instead of having something tall and slim, you've now got something that's closer to a square, and it works really well with most browsers. It works extremely well with email, and a lot of content creation programs tend to like it because it's easier to scroll up and down than to scroll sideways and up and down. So interesting. I much prefer 4x3 ratio rather than the tall and thin ratios of variable ratios going there. It also has an upgraded 5.5 inch cover screen, which is quite a big deal. The screen is edge to edge, very little bevel, and it's much, much more useful. We'll delve into that in the more detailed run in a few minutes. It's also the lightest Galaxy Fold, the 2201 grams, and offers a 4,800 milliamp battery, which is not terribly smaller than the even bigger Ultra model. And that should deliver around about a playback. And then the last, and that's probably the most familiar, is the Galaxy Z Flip, which is now thinner. It's 6.1 millimeter unfolded and lighter, so it's 180 grams. And its flex window, that they've now called the front window, flex window, has been upgraded so that you can handle notifications, widgets, messaging, and even some apps without opening the phone. Before, the front screen was more of an information display than an actual screen, unlike the Z Fold, which was essentially a full single screen phone. Now the Flip actually gets a lot of that functionality. It certainly makes a big difference. The screen wraps around the camera. It just looks very cool, and it is a lot more usable without flipping the phone open. It's also got some interesting camera tools, which include dual recording, so you can flip it open, stand it somewhere. It'll record front and back, which is quite cool for certain things, and better stabilization aimed at creators. And this phone definitely is aimed at the young and sort of up-and-coming creators. These are sort of fashionistas out there, but it is cool. It's small. It fits into any small little bag. It and has the power and the capability of the bigger ones in a much smaller, simpler form factor. So on all of these phones, they weren't very heavily pushing. I watched the launch. They weren't pushing the AI features as much as before, but definitely there's a full host of Galaxy AI features, all powered by Google, and they are pretty insane. The pricing and everything we'll discuss later, but they will be available in a few weeks. And there's some great, as usual with Samsung, some great launch specials, which give you lots of accessories and some other benefits for the first couple of months. But we'll discuss that all in a few minutes. Before we get there,
this is Tech Talk with Stephen Ambrose on 101.9 High FM.
Well, welcome back. And as I promised, you can see there's a bit of a heavy focus on Samsung. But the Galaxy Unpacked launch always, every year, round about this time, is a little early. They keep bringing it a little earlier. I'm not sure. They'll finally fold it into, They'll fold it into the February, March launch of the Galaxy phones, but they always seem to want to just get in before the full holiday break hits in the Northern Hemisphere, which is August, which is generally nothing happening while everyone sort of sits on the beaches or wherever they go. But and then get really well set up with the products being in market before the rest of the mobile devices, name mostly with regard to sort of newsworthiness, where the Apple devices come out September range, And they motor into the end of the year sales session with brand new devices, some really hard pushes around bundles and cool new gadgets that make it super interesting. So this is a significant launch. It really, really sets the tone for what's coming in the next little while. And as usual, Samsung are not scared to push the edge in terms of technology. As I said, like on the earlier folds, there was a little bit of dirt got under the screen. Perhaps the technology was two or three generations away from being true stability. And us crazy tech-loving people tend to get involved in stuff that's maybe bleeding edge, and you take the knocks from that, you know, lower reliability and possibly some lower quality. But still, it sets the tone for the types of technologies, the types of cutting edge product that you expect. And today, 3, 4, 5 years later, you are seeing a proliferation of the types of tech that are built into these devices, and they set the tone. So from a technology creation point of view, Samsung is without question at the upper end. As you probably all know, Samsung are very heavily invested in the Android Google ecosystem. They were also the fastest to market with AI and the whole Gemini backend that uniquely Google. I mean, a little quick digression. AI is all about data. Without data, without teaching, without information, the technology could, the algorithms, the LLMs, the AI platforms would only be as clever as a two-year-old with no information and no schooling. But throw in the vast client base that Google has, the insane amount of data that it has through the browser, through the Google platform, through the indexing of the internet for pretty much decades. When you bring all of that to bear and you feed that knowledge and that information, privacy and all the rest aside, into a platform, it's very, very hard to beat the sheer depth and scale. And then you have the financial ability of the Google empire to be able to really pay to do everything. And that's taking nothing away from Anthropic and from all the other guys who've done an incredible job at pushing the AI revolution forward, along with X, another company that actually has access to a ton of data. But still, having that in your phone at an early stage gave, I think, Samsung an edge. Up until now, with the launch of the new Google-powered Apple Intelligence in iOS 27 going forward, we're going to see some interesting competition. But for now, get Samsung Galaxy devices, and even their mid-range devices, have a level of sophistication, integration, and power in AI that is very, very hard to beat. So although they didn't focus entirely heavily on that, and they looked more at the benefits of the various Fold devices, AI is the story. Its ability to enhance and make your usage of day-to-day stuff and stuff you hadn't even thought about on your phone, and turn your phone into a portal or into a window, into an incredible amount of useful functionality in terms of photographs, in terms of creation, in terms of anything. I mean, it becomes your camera for the creators. They can take the most amazing videos, pictures, whatever you want, and at the same time process it, manage it, transmit it, deal with it, do everything they need to do, run the entire business off a tiny little 200 gram device where you needed a laptop, you needed cameras, you needed cables, you needed studios. You can do 98% of all of that right on the phone that sits in your pocket. So the sheer power of these devices cannot be underestimated. But essentially, the focus of this entire launch was the foldable category. And the headlines are the new Ultra Z Fold 8. Now, they've never had some. They've had an Ultra in the Galaxy the Galaxy range, but never in the Z Fold range. So now we've got the Z Fold 8 Ultra, and it's a very, very interesting story. The big design story is definitely the regular Z Fold 8, which has got a lot of thought, but the Ultra keeps the traditional book style shape of the old folds, but pushes thinness. Now, 4.1 millimeter unfolded is so it's round about eight. Well, it's not round, it's exactly mathematically 8.2 folded. With a new hinge, the durability of the Flex Titanium screen, and the performance of the latest Snapdragon chips with a larger battery really does push the Z Fold 8 Ultra right to the very edge of what is commercially and production possible in mobile phones today. So you've got an ultra thin, very cleanly styled device with ultra level cameras, is the best that they make on the back. They do stick out a little because you just simply cannot put those lenses into 4.1 millimeters. So there is a little bit of a bump when you lay it on the on its back and it sits slightly off, which neither here nor there. When you add a cover, it probably fills that space quite well, sort of defeats the 4.1 millimeter thinness, but covers, especially for those of us who occasionally are busy and then drop stuff, it's definitely recommended. But the technology and the sheer ability, watching the videos, watching, reading about everyone who's handled it, the new form factor, the new thinness, the new solidness of the phone is pretty much cutting edge. It's right there along with some of the best products on the market. And more importantly than that, as I said, is the sheer stability and breadth of the Samsung ecosystem, from Samsung through Pay, through the service, through everything that goes on with Samsung in terms of upgrades and in terms of everything. It's just, when you're spending, and I'll tell you the money, it's not insignificant money. This device starts at stupid money. You can buy a car for the price of a phone that you put in your pocket. But not a great car, but you can certainly get something with wheels. It really is a push towards being one of the sort of flagship devices on the market. Snapdragon chip inside, a lot the large battery, and it is pushed mostly as a productivity flagship. Where they seem to have aimed this is that this device is for those that do power use. In other words, there's a lot of work that goes on. You need a really big screen to edit, to create, to work with data, to look at spreadsheets, to look at documents, create those documents, and just generally do a lot of work that you would normally put on a tablet or a laptop. And here you've got something that gets certainly much more functional. There's nothing worse than reading a lot of long-winded documents for whatever purpose on a tiny little 5 or 6 or 7, even nearly a 7-inch screen. On this, you can multitask like a demon. You can have one thing on the one side, one on the other, and still read it and still work on it. So there's no question this, and especially at this price, is aimed at a very forward-thinking, executive, and well-heeled market. But it is advice for those who live in multi-window modes, take notes, or run AI tools. And this, again, is where the new Snapdragon chips and the sheer battery power and the processing power of the device comes in. There are a ton of AI tools that can run on the device for security or process, you know, the multi-agentic type platforms and still keep running for a whole day while you're on the move or wherever you are. The Z Fold Ultra, on the other hand, is really interesting. It really, I think, does fill a gap for the more casual use of a device. So a lot of people found that the long, tall, thin, and the size of the Z Fold 8 didn't really work well for just general use. It was, I noticed a lot of people with that device had other devices for other reasons. When they were going out, when they're going to restaurants, they're going to play sport, or they're going for a run, you definitely don't take your Z Fold 8 with you. It's too big, it's too bulky, and it's difficult to use in that context for everybody. The Z Fold Ultra, on the other hand, is quite the sort of general user phone. And I think what they're trying to do, it's for power users, no question, not the ultra power users, but people who use their phone a lot and do a lot on their phone for not just, you know, checking the time or taking pictures of the kids, but generally a little bit of banking, some paperwork, you know, staying in touch with the office, using apps and many, many of these sort of power use. Also for navigation in the car and anywhere, using a large screen does make a big difference. But the new 4x3 screen size is absolutely really cool. And 10.6 when it's folded, so it's got a fully functional front screen, which is bigger and slightly wider than most normal cell phones. And it also is the lightest one they've ever had of the foldables. So it makes a huge difference when it's super light, super easy. The battery power is also excellent, 4,800 milliamp battery, and it charges to 63% or 70% in under 30 minutes. It's got 45 watt fast charging, which is quite a big difference. 25 used to be seen as fast. Some models out there have 60 watt and above charging, which makes a big difference. But I think you have to balance charging speed with battery longevity and just sheer heat generation. A lot of the really fast charging phones get super hot. I don't know how good it is for the internals of the phone to run at those sort of temperatures. It's very convenient. You plug it in and you get to 80% in 20 minutes. It's pretty impressive. But like a car, you've got to sort of balance longevity with speed. And 30 minutes, everyone's got 30 minutes at a time. You just plug it in for 30 minutes and you've got pretty much between 60 and 80% or close to 100%, depending where you started. The real story of these devices is the new Snapdragon 8 Elite processor, which is very AI focused. So not only does it do all the traditional functions really, really well, it's got multi-core, it's extremely clever with the battery usage, switching down cores when you're doing simple stuff, like making a phone call. Who would have thought phone calls were simple stuff? And switch all the processors on when you're doing some heavy multitasking, along with a lot of AI usage. As I said, the big difference between normal usage and AI is that normal usage is linear. In other words, you request a video, it streams. There's two or three things going on there. It's a little bit of information going up, a bit of processing to decode the video, a little bit of processing to manage the screen, so the whole processor can shut down a little and just deal with one or two or three or even 10 things at the same time. When you switch into AI mode, we're talking about hundreds of backwards and forwards processes happening simultaneously. If you move into agentic, there it spins up multiple processes at ridiculously rapid rates. It starts sending and asking information through the radio at incredible rates. So you're talking to multiple websites, you're talking to multiple backend servers, and all of this is creating enormous amounts of data flowing up and down. But it's not just the quantity, it's the density. That number of simultaneous instructions that are being run through a tiny, tiny little chip in the middle of your phone has a couple of demands. One, it's all got to be scheduled and managed in a way that it doesn't make your phone stagger and stutter and feel weird, because that has happened in the past. You do something and suddenly other apps stop being responsive. It just gets really, and it's happened onto laptops. Some of the sort of 2 to 3 year old laptops today, when you start using AI, instantly you can see you can't scroll through a website while the other side's working. It's just so interesting how the nature of processing has changed fundamentally in the AI world. And the new chipsets in the latest Fold range definitely are optimized for this. So you'll find that overall, it's not just processing power, but it's the smoothness at which the rest of the phone runs when AI is working. And that could be simple stuff, just like when you have a picture that's being manipulated and managed or changed or updated, or when you're cleaning up a picture and there's phone calls or WhatsApps and other things coming in. You don't need things to get sort of stuck at certain levels or things to move and go slowly. It just subconsciously makes the experience less fluid. And that's a big thing with mobile devices. Those that remain smooth under pressure just make your whole user interface easier and better. And the Z Fold 7s were pretty good in this regard, but I can see, based on what I've read about the new processors, that should be even better. So with high refresh rate screens, fast and dense capability of the processors, you're going to see a much easier, smoother feel to scrolling, and especially when you're multitasking, because on these big screens, you can have two separate apps running next to each other, which is not something that was always split screen. You could do that before, but on a tiny screen, it became more of a novelty than a useful thing. On a big screen like the Z Fold 8 and the 8 Ultra, you definitely are going to be able to run two complete separate apps running on one side and on the other, side by side, dragging and dropping while one's processing. So you're running some sort of multitasked AI functionality in one screen, and you're busy updating your emails or looking at some recipes, doesn't matter what, on the other side, and everything runs smoothly. So the Z Fold, or rather the Z Flip, the Z Fold 8 definitely feels like a phone that's been aimed, also priced, and aimed at a much wider audience. I think it will bring foldables into play for those that were on the sort of sitting on the outside of this little circle for now. The screen is really, the front screen is slightly smaller than flagship size, but at 5.5 is still very usable. All functionality remains. When you open it, just the way it's set up for reading, for browsing, for just general use, feels a lot more easy. I think that's the best way to put it. And I think it will appeal to a lot more people. The Ultra remains the utter flagship, but the Z Fold 8 with most of the same technology definitely brings the Fold into a wider audience and helps to make sure that one-handed use is much more sort of reasonable. And it just makes a lot of sense. The last in the range, which is really, really interesting, is the Z Flip 8. And the focus here is on the front screen. They call it the flex window. I love how the marketing people come up with fancy names for standard stuff like a screen. You really can do more now without opening the phone. You can check messages, you can control music, you can view widgets, you can even use some of the camera features from the front screen. You do not have to open it. So it's a really small, when it's folded, it's not terribly thick. It's just a really useful form factor if you want to quickly do some stuff without, you know, looking like a nerd opening it up and then typing away. And then it's a more standard phone when it's open. It looks very much like a standard Galaxy phone. But here you've got a lot more functionality on the front. And as I said, it certainly seems to be aimed at the creators out there with its dual camera functionality and all the rest. And just, I'll talk a little bit about it later in a few minutes, but these are expensive devices. They definitely are going to be at the top end of things. The Z Fold Ultra 8 is 50,999 Rand for the 512 gig and 60,999 for a 1 terabyte device. I mean, these, as I said, you could get a car. The Z Fold 8 is a little bit more moderate at 40,999 for a 256 and 45,999 for the 512. And the Flip 8 is at 26,999, a little bit more useful. They also launched the Galaxy Watch Ultra, which is at 14,999, and the Galaxy Watch 9 at 8,999 with LTE and 7,999 with Bluetooth only. All of these are pre-orderable now. And you get free accessories up to $1,500, free Samsung SOS for 12 months, and 6 months of Google AI Pro for free. This one bothers me a little because it's worth $2,500, and Google AI Pro is significantly better than standard Google AI. But you buy a phone for its AI functionality, and then they make it a payment option. So after 6 months, you're going to be paying $400 a month, $500 a month to keep the functionality that you've got used to. It's the classic freemium, buy now and use later. But we'll talk about that in a few minutes. It is now time for our sponsors. And when we get back, I've got a quick live read, and then we'll move on to the news of the week and just a quick wrap-up of the Samsung Galaxy Unpacked. We'll be back straight after this.
This is Tech Talk with Stephen Ambrose on 101.9 High FM.
Well, welcome back. Just a quick wrap-up. Normally, I get into the news of the week, and then I've got a cool little gadget from Google. Gadget from Google, lots of that. But I just want to do a quick wrap-up of the Galaxy Unpacked. The Google Watch Ultra 2, it's always been a great device. It's titanium. It's just a singularly big, impressive-looking, and very capable device has been updated. It's fine-tuned for comfort. They say they've got a better screen, better shape. It's got a 35% larger battery and a 32% faster CPU and a really, really bright screen. Good quality and fits seamlessly into the Samsung ecosystem the same way as the Apple Watches do. But it is really an impressive device. The price is high, but the quality is also very, very high. It's worth it if you really want something that's top of the range. It's also got professional diving capabilities to 10 ATMs, which is pretty good. And there's some exclusive apps coming. They keep promising these things. Apple did too and haven't seen them, but let's see when they come. The other one is the more commercial Watch 9. Great way to manage your help. Also more comfortable than ever. Great battery life. And it does all the fitness tracking. And of course, extensive AI-powered health tracking with actionable insights built into the Galaxy ecosystem. Fitbit and Google have done it with other devices, but this is part of the Samsung ecosystem, and there's no additional cost for these things. It's all built in. And the experience I've had with Samsung Health and the various apps surrounding it are pretty impressive. They're certainly as good as many others and well integrated into the whole experience. So if you're in the Samsung world with a Samsung phone, a Samsung watch makes some sense. So that essentially was a power-packed couple of minutes of Samsung everything. And you can check out all the new details on Samsung.com. It'll automatically take you to South Africa. And there's a lot of little extras. Again, I'm not terribly happy or pleased with the fact that you got to get Google AI Pro. It should be at least for the warranty of the phone, of the watch itself and the phone. But that being said, there's certainly other benefits. You can get the new Samsung Care Plus plan at special discounts. And all of this, as I said, Samsung has an incredibly comprehensive ecosystem because these are expensive devices. They can be looked after properly, and they do retain their value pretty well over the next couple of years. So well worth a buy if you're looking at. The last word I have on this is upgrade. If you have last year's Galaxy 7s, unless you want the new form factor, probably not the smartest upgrade. But anything beyond that, 2 years old, the upgrade in performance and quality and style is without question a big one. You're going to get a huge jump in physical form factor, in power performance, especially going forward as AI evolves. Obviously, cameras are right up there. The operating system is super slick. It's updated really well with Samsung. Their overlay, their UI is pretty clean. They've got app clutter down. So very, very much a cautious buy immediately, because I like tech. But upgrading, if you've got a year-old device, probably not. But anything beyond that, definitely would get a massive, massive kick. And moving on to some more sort of general non-Samsung stuff, because we could spend the entire hour just discussing Samsung and all its new devices. Interestingly, and I don't know how much use this will be, but I see Airports Company are getting in on the general, let's get a decent app going, and is adding AI and augmented reality to its official airport app. So for you, those of you who are really never been to OR Tambo or to Cape Town Airport or any other and really get lost because they're so windy, not terrible. If you want to get lost, try Schiphol or one or two in Germany. You can just completely never know where you are. Though the ultimate you don't know what's going on airport is still Charles de Gaulle in Paris, but story about that some other time. But it does help. You get smart navigation, real-time guidance, and a lot of augmented reality features to help find gates, shops, and services more easily. I've never downloaded the AXA app, but I have now and looked at it. It's pretty well built. It looks pretty easy. You can see the shops and services. It's pretty useful for frequent flyers and certainly useful for first-time travelers who might be a little anxious with all the craziness, Terminal A, Terminal B, you don't know where to go. It really works, and it's pretty cool. So if you're traveling, which a lot of people are, and we move into the end of the year with lots of travel, it may make life a little easier. They'll probably integrate better parking and all sorts of things. So keep your eye on this. It's a good move from them, and it certainly does bring the app much more in line with the Schiphol, Heathrow, and the other top-end apps out there. Now, something that I've been watching with a lot of interest is the sub-500,000 electric vehicle launches in South Africa. There are a couple from many, many, many manufacturers. Interestingly, 99% of them, or 100%, let's be honest, are Chinese. And The latest in this range is the Chery Q. Now, Chery have been around in South Africa, probably was one of the first electric cars, not electric, the first Chinese brands that hit the road. But they've just launched a new one called the Chery Q for around about 350,000 Rand in the base model and 400,000 in the sort of fancier model, which is incredibly low priced for an electric car. And the size of the car is round about the same as a Golf, which makes it pretty roomy and pretty easy. And the key thing, and where you can see slight compromise, it's got a smallish battery at 42.7 kilowatts. And they claim somewhere between 320, 340 to 400 kilometers, depending. It's got automatic regeneration. So highway use of electric cars is always a problem because it's only steady state power out. Whereas in-town driving, it's power on, power off. As you take the power off, it regenerates a little. So you get 10, 20% increase in range simply because you're buying back power every time you brake. But a story again down the road. But between 300 and 400 Ks is not bad for general use. I mean, on a normal tank of fuel, you normally got between 300 and 400 in town. So anyway, let's just do a quick live read before we come back with some more news of the week and another quick shout out from our sponsors. Are you looking to reach an engaged, loyal audience? There's no better place to do it than right here on Chai FM. Our listeners tune in every day for music, conversation, and news they can trust, and great tech programs like Tech Talk. When you, and that's my little advert, when you advertise on Chai FM, you're not just buying airtime, you're becoming part of a community that genuinely listens. Whether you're a small business or an established brand, we'd love to have a conversation of how we can work together and help you push your brand, your product, your service, whatever. WhatsApp us on 061-895-1019. That's 061-895-1019. Or email us on info@chaifm.com. That's really easy. info@chaifm.com. And we'll reach out to you. Chai FM, part of your day, every single day. And we'll be back straight after this.
This is Tech Talk with Stephen Ambrose on 101.9 Chai FM.
Well, we're back and I'll wrap this up pretty quickly. Very impressed with the new Chery. It looks like an incredible car for an incredible price. Certainly competes with the entry-level Polo Vivos. And they've got some great starter sort of, if you buy the car, you get a whole lot of stuff like a free charger, a free charging card, a home charging wall box, portable charging equipment, and an electric tailgate just to sweeten the deal. It's worth having a look. And I'm really impressed with the number of and quality. Like BYD and others have just brought out cars at prices that are very attractive. And certainly electric is becoming a big deal. It's hard for long range commuting, but certainly zipping around town, doing your chores, fetching the kids, running about makes a lot of sense. It's quiet. It's very cost effective. And if you've got a charger at home, certainly you always wake up to a full car every single time. Now, another interesting story is something from Meta, our friend's Facebook. They've got a product called Story Kit. Now, what this does, it's very cool, actually, is an AI app that generates customized stories for children. So parents can create personalized bedtime or educational stories and just have, I played with it very briefly. It came across my desk this week as a press release from the people at Meta. And it just makes so much sense. If you've got a particular, you want to reinforce some schoolwork, or you simply want to create something that's really personal for your kids, it does an incredible job. Some of the samples that I read were just sweet and extremely clever and well sorted out. I mean, AI as a music creation, writing creation app is pretty cool. There's a lot of sort of ethical things around that, but again, not for me to discuss that here. But as a technology, this is just great. And it's really an interesting example of how AI is moving into family and education tools and absolutely everything that we are doing these days. It's just becoming part of absolutely everything we do. Now, a great story told by a parent to a kid has always been a good thing, but here's one that can really take it to the next level and make it super cool, especially for our smart kids who want to work and read on their iPads and whatnot. And essentially, my last sort of big story before we get to the tip of the app of the week is the whole huge hype and launch of Amazon Leo, which, yeah, I just want to bring a little bit of reality to this. Amazon Leo looks like it may be an incredible technology. And there's just no question that for places like South Africa and Africa, more rural, where everything's heavily sort of focused on the cities, and the rural areas really struggle just by economics and distance to get the latest and greatest in tech. High-speed, low-Earth orbiting satellite services like Starlink, and here now our friend Amazon Leo, certainly make a lot of sense. And they are pushing the hell out of this. Herotel is their chief officer, Van Selberter, believes that broadband service will offer better speeds than Starlink. And essentially, wherever you read about it, there's this huge hype about how they found their way into South Africa without all the regulatory issues and without, you know, all this nonsense. They're just operating on a wholesale basis, which is not something Starlink has ever done. Starlink, nowhere in the world has a system where they have people that buy wholesale from them and resell that service to third parties. And South Africa was pretty much saying, give us 35% or 30% of your business, otherwise you can't operate here with a license, or find a way to put some BEE structure in place where some connected people will make money out of it by becoming the middleman. And Starlink just said, not a chance. I was a South African and I can't operate because I'm not black, which is an interesting position to take. It's being spun as, oh, they're just not prepared to compromise and not follow the laws of the land and yada yada. Without any comment on that, it's just telling on how different it is. But here's the reality. Amazon have a couple of hundred satellites in launch right now. Most of them, in fact, all of them are focused on big cities in Europe and America. None of them are focused on South Africa. Obviously, they will focus a few on South Africa down the road. But where Starlink is right now, they have got 10,800 satellites in the market floating around the Earth, and they're updating them, or rather improving them and increasing them at the range of 1,500 every 6 months, 2,000, 3,000, 4,000 a year. Also, of course, they're launching directly. Amazon have got their own launch platform, which blew up recently, but slow. So they have tried to get to 3,500, 4,000 satellites in the next couple of years, at which point Starlink have an upper reality of 40,000. So as a service goes, Starlink will be extremely hard to beat anywhere in the world, simply by sheer dint of the fact that they've got more satellites and they're in lower Earth orbit, and they're just smarter and easier to use. So on that note, just before you even sign up or spend any money on something like Leo, just realize that there's certain realities that can't be overcome. And I'll talk more about this down the road. In the interim, I'm afraid we have absolutely run out of time. I was going to talk about something called Google Keep. It's a note-keeping app. Try it. It's cheap. It's free. It's available on Android and iOS. And it's got some clever note-taking apps. But anyway, on that note, I've been told I have to wrap up, to call it quits for this show. Stay tuned right here on Chai FM. Every Friday, same time, same place, and I'll bring you all the latest gadgets, gizmos, and news in the tech world. This is Stephen Ambrose for Tech Talk right here on Chai FM.